Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Turbo Time Podcast. I'm your host, James Cook, the Associate Editor of Turbo Machinery International. For this episode, we're joined by the Mythbusters Klaus Brun and Rainer Kurz, who will be discussing maintenance and repair. Klaus and Rainer, take it away.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to another interesting discussion with Rainer here on our Turbo MythBusters podcast. Today, we're planning to talk a little bit about scheduled maintenance and condition-based maintenance, and what plays into all of that kind of stuff. And that's a very relevant topic because with the onset of AI, there's a lot of discussion on how that can be done better and how that it impacted. So why don't we just kind of start talking about it? We've previously talked quite a bit about failure mechanisms and modes and turbo machinery and how they come about and how you can avoid them. But really, the main factor to avoid failure and shutdowns and the requirements for intervention is really to do your maintenance and your repairs and your overhauls correctly. So Rainer, can you kind of start a little bit, how do you avoid failures and how does maintenance play into avoiding failures and what are some of the maintenance activities on the gas turbine compressor that you really require?
Thanks, Klaus. I mean, failures come in different, if you will, flavors and severities. And you really have to look at the impact from the operator's perspective. There are plants that have redundant machinery, so the maintenance aspects then can be seen far more relaxed than if you have one critical piece of machinery, and if that machine fails, your production is down. That also, by the way, is not just failure detection and failure prevention, but also like the logistics of spare parts, how to get them to site. Do you have them locally? Do they have to be shipped? How is the machinery maintained? And we'll talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I also like to look at it from a machine perspective of, what goes into the machine, right? I mean, when you look at the machine, you have, let's say, a gas turbine, you have fuel, you have air, you have sometimes water, you have lube oil. And so these are all your utilities. And so the maintenance then really affects some of these utilities and how you handle them. I mean, you have to change your oil, right? You have to filter your oil. You have water quality, you have air filtration. You got to make sure your air filters get changed, right, at certain intervals. Otherwise, you're going to make a carryover of stuff into your gas turbine. And all of these things then affect your failure mechanisms, right? So your failure mechanisms are many, as you correctly stated. I mean, you get fouling, which then can lead to compressor degradation. You get creep in your combustor. You get thermomechanical fatigue, high cycle fatigue, low cycle fatigue, corrosion, erosion, all these different things that can happen in a gas turbine or in a compressor or in a pump or an expander. They re result then in coating spallation, tip clearance opening, which all eventually lead to, at the minimum, degradation, but can also lead to a failure of a machine and even catastrophic failure of a machine. So your maintenance activities for a turbo machine are really aimed at making sure that your machine operates with utilities that are clean and addresses any kind of issues that lead to degradation and potentially in the long term, failure.
Yeah, and Klaus mentioned degradation. I mean, the problem is really that you're not just trying to prevent your machinery from catastrophic failures where things break and make the machine inoperable, probably for an extended period of time, but you also have the issue of degradation where simply the performance of the machine may not be as good as new. And then the question is, do you want to fix it or are you going to live with it? Similarly, there are things, for example, leakages in some systems that don't make the machine inoperable, but may in the long run lead to more serious problems. So it's a whole different set of events that you're trying to prevent or mitigate with maintenance. And then the other thing is, it's a fact of life that any type of machinery eventually will degrade and eventually will fail. The problem is that it's a somewhat probabilistic process. Some failures announce themselves. So by condition monitoring, you can actually take action before the failure occurs. Some failures, however, are more or less random. Now, there are Weibull curves where it says failures happen mostly in the beginning and then sort of towards the end of useful life, but these are statistical processes. So failures, and then the question becomes, is a specific failure gonna stop me from operating the machine? Or is it just a nuisance? Or is it just a reduced operability? Part of that is then you have to keep in mind any intervention to a machine may cost you a lot of money because you may have to stop processes. So that's why, for example, in many instances, people do scheduled maintenance. For example, on refineries or process plants, they may say, "Okay, we're going to shut the plant down every 5 or 6 years, and then we fix everything that even if it sort of still looks okay, but we put that according to schedule." So that's one strategy, and for the plants in question, it seems to work reasonably well. There are other installations where you say, okay, I don't want to do maintenance if I don't have to. So that's where condition monitoring comes in. So again, you really have to look into failures and maintenance very much in front of the background on what you want to achieve and what your risk points with your machinery.
And really, as you correctly stated, most of the time you want to run your machines, right? And let's say in a refinery or an olefins plant, you want to run continuously. Now, there are some plants where you shut down and you start up, like on a pipeline, where machines have a certain amount of downtime depending on how much gas is available to be compressed. But in most applications, when you put in a turbo machine, you put it in there because you want to run it continuously. And so you really only have three types of interventions. One is the interventions when you have a trip or an alarm comes up and you have to shut down, right? Nothing you can do about it because your alarm says you have a problem with the machine. And then there's really two other ones, which is scheduled one, which is based on, okay, after a certain number of hours, my combustor will have enough creep or thermomechanical fatigue or something. And that may be 30,000 hours or 24,000 hours, depending on the manufacturer you deal with. And then you have to overhaul it. And then there is condition-based maintenance, which is basically saying, I know the condition of my machine well enough so that I can potentially extend that 24,000 hours to 32,000 hours or 48,000 hours. But there are certainly risks that are associated with that because the longer you run these pieces, the higher the risk of failure. And then that failure could easily turn into, from a minor event into a catastrophic failure. So your risk curve goes up exponentially as you run beyond, what is really an expected mean time between failure for a certain part under certain operating condition, be it a blade or be it a combustor liner or be it an injector into it or a first stage nozzle or blade in a power turbine. So the question is, how do we schedule this? What are the factors that we use to determine a compressor? Does it need to be overhauled every 10 years or every 5 years? Or do you look at individual pieces? I think for a gas turbine, it's relatively easy, right? In a gas turbine, it's driven by thermomechanical fatigue and creep and primarily of the hot section parts. But for a compressor and for pumps and those kind of pieces of equipment, it's not that easy.
I mean, on gas turbines, as Klaus brought it up, yes, we understand creep life. Absolutely. The problem is that the components that are life limiting because of creep see certain operating conditions that change depending on how I run the gas turbine. So if I had a perfect model where I, for every second of the operation of the gas turbine, would know what temperatures, what pressures, and what gas compositions that piece is exposed to, then I could very accurately determine when I reached the creep life. But in generally, I can't. So I mean, that's sort of the promise of the digital twin, that if you could, you could be very very predictive on your maintenance. But in reality, you do often the next best thing, which is you conclude from general operating conditions. Let's say I run the engine a lot at part load, or I start the engine a lot, or things like that, which are things you can monitor, that I then make a prediction on how that affects the creep life. So that's sort of the next best thing. And then the easiest thing is to say, okay, my experience is every 30,000 hours or every 40,000 hours or whatever the number is, I get to the point where my failure risk is so high that I have to replace a part.
Yeah. So really there's two types of pieces here, right? One is, well, there's really three. One is the pieces that last forever, right? A compressor casing may last 25, 30, 40 years and will never fail, right? But then there's wear parts, you know, like O-rings, seals, lube oil, filters, all that kind of stuff. And we kind of sort of know what the life of these pieces are. If you have a filter and you have a certain ingestion of air with certain particulate count, then you know these filters need to be changed. Replaced every certain number of months, and you gain that knowledge with running your unit. Same as lube oil, O-rings, gaskets, and all these things. These are basically wear parts. And then you have what Rainer started to talk about, which is life-limiting parts, right? Things that eventually, due to creep, some mechanical fatigue, operating cycles, accumulation of stress factors, really get to an end of life, and there's not much you can do about it. You can maybe repair them, but most of the time you just have to replace those. And those tend to be closer related to thermal rather than cyclical events. You know, in a compressor, you don't really deal with high temperatures most of the time. You really deal more with high cycle fatigue type events rather than creep or thermal mechanical fatigue. So on the gas turbine side, that's you know what tends to happen. You get to a certain life. You know, say you go to one manufacturer and they say 30,000 hours, and that's basically when you have to do an overhaul. And that's based on a very good understanding of if you were to run your gas turbine more or less at full load, then after 30,000 hours, you pretty much reach the creep life of your combustor internals and probably your first stage nozzles and your first stage hot section in your on turbo blades too. But then there's other things, and you know, not everything is an overhaul, right? There's also just basic maintenance activities. You may have a maintenance activity at 2,000 hours, 4,000 hours, 8,000 hours, etc. And for some of those, you really don't have to shut the machine down all the time. I mean, you can change your lube oil filter in the gas turbine. If you have a duplex filter, you can change that lube oil filter cartridge without having to shut the unit down. So maintenance is not all just you have to shut the unit down, but it's also performing activities that are scheduled. And for those type of activities, condition-based maintenance probably plays less of a role because it's probably cheaper just to do those maintenance activities and get it over with and not having to worry about if your filter is plugging up or if your lube oil quality is starting to degrade. So what are some of these life-limiting parts? I think I mentioned it already, you know, combustor, but are there other life-limiting parts on a gas turbine or compressor Rainer that you can think of?
Well, I mean, in general, the hot section is one of the areas that, because it's exposed to very high temperatures, which is something, for example, on a centrifugal gas compressors, we don't have. And then it depends on the environment you're operating at. Hot sections may be exposed to hot corrosion, which is simply a function of how dirty is your fuel and how dirty is your inlet air, things like that. And then there are parts that have statistical life expectancies. For example, if you compare hydrodynamic bearings with anti-friction bearings, the hydrodynamic bearing technically has a almost infinite life, assuming you keep your oil clean and you don't surge your compressor or get into high vibrations. Anti-friction bearing has a statistical life. So basically, you put your bearing at the bearing in a machine, and then after 10,000 hours or 20,000 hours, a certain percentage of these bearings will fail. And actually, a lot of failures are statistical in nature. So how do you protect yourself from that? I mean, one of the things is that you, for example, have spare parts available. So if the indication of the operation shows that one of these parts acts up or shows weird performance signatures, then it's easy to replace that part because you have one on site. If you're operating a machine, let's say offshore West Africa, logistics, spare parts logistics are a big topic, and you have to manage that. The other thing that's very clear in this discussion is that you need to monitor the machine behavior. So instrumentation is an important part, and what you do with the signals that you get from your instrumentation, how you interpret them, and how you conclude from certain behavior, high vibrations, for example, what parts may fail or may fail in the near future.
And so, I mean, I think you nailed it there. By proper sparing and having parts available for obviously consumables, but also for long life-limited parts, you can limit the amount of downtime that you're going to get on a machine. Because even for, pieces that are supposed to live for 30,000 hours, we know they're going to come to an end. So you may as well get, when you get to a certain number of hours, you may as well get the manufacturer ready and order the parts so that you can have everything ready on site, or have the manufacturer ready to do the overhaul or the repair or whatever is needed when you get to the basically life of a particular part. But that kind of transitions into, we've so far talked primarily about scheduled based on operating hour type maintenance, but now everybody's talking about condition-based maintenance and AI and how that's playing together. And obviously, everybody wants to extend the life of their machine, be it a compressor, a pump, expander, gas turbine, because it's money, right? I mean, the more hours you get out of your machine before you have to do an intervention, theoretically, if it doesn't lead to a catastrophic failure, you save yourself money because you've basically expanded the life of your machine by a year, and you saved yourself some of the time of that it would take to do an overhaul. How does condition-based maintenance play into this? Because we've been talking about this now for 20 or 30 years about condition-based maintenance. Really, it's come a long ways, but it really, we're still primarily on a time-based maintenance activities for most machines.
Well, on the gas turbine side, actually, condition-based maintenance has made big inroads. And that's probably also due to the fact that if you monitor the operating condition in the widest sense of your machine, you capture a lot of things that lead to overhaul events. So if, let's say, if your major risk for a machine is the unexpected wet liquid slug going through your impellers and wiping your thrust bearing, there's not much you can do with condition monitoring. It either happens or it doesn't. Whereas in a gas turbine, for example, if you're worried about creep life, the conditions that you can monitor give you a good indication on how much you load a component. So on the gas turbine side, you actually see a lot of condition-based maintenance, and it works very successfully. I mean, the thing is really you have to think about is why are we doing all this? The key measurement for a user of any equipment is availability. And because non-availability costs money. If you have a plant that you have to shut down because of the non-availability of a machine and you lose $1 million or $2 million a day, then the loss in production easily makes up actually for the cost of your turbo machinery or whatever spare parts you want to put in place. Whereas if you have spares, you can do a maintenance strategy where you say, okay, fine, I'm going to run this thing until a failure becomes very likely, or actually a failure happens because I have backups. But the name of the game of maintenance is ultimately, how do I keep the availability of the machine up? And availability really has two factors. One is a machine fails, but it also has as a factor, how much time do I have to shut down to do my maintenance activity. So these are two things that you have to balance.
Yeah, so it's really a risk commercial game, right? Because if the
Yes.
failure or a shutdown, a forced outage is extremely expensive and you have to shut down an entire refinery or an olefin plant because of your turbo machine went down, then you're probably going to do everything possible to avoid that. And you're going to go more with a conservative hours-based maintenance intervals rather than condition-based intervals. We see similar what you said about gas turbines. We see that on steam turbines because there are similar issues. It's easier to predict what happens to the remaining life of a steam turbine because you are familiar with thermomechanical fatigue and creep, and those are the same factors that happen in a steam turbine. But you're right, if you lose water quality in a steam turbine plant, then your plant is going to go down very, very quickly, and no condition-based maintenance is going to help you with that. When you look at that risk game from the condition-based maintenance perspective, I really see three things, right? You're not measuring the failure mode, right? You're measuring something. You're measuring temperatures, pressures, vibrations. You're measuring all kinds of things, but you're not. So it's an indirect measurement. You're not measuring creep. You're not measuring some mechanical fatigue. You're not measuring anything that is actually the failure. So you have to deduce from your measurements. And from lots and lots of experience, you have to deduce when something is going to be failing based on indirect measurements. And furthermore, these indirect measurements may be wrong, right? Or they may be inaccurate because your sensors may be off by 2% or 3% or 5%. And then when you're trying to predict within a certain number of hours when my machine is going to fail, but if my sensor is off by 5%, then you're probably going to be off by 5% in your predictions. And remember that all these sensor measurements, if they're all non-calibrated, then they're accumulated. You may be off by 30% instead of 5%. So sensor accuracy plays a role, but that's something that can be controlled, right? You can calibrate your sensors, and you can kind of sort of buy better sensors and more sensors and control that. The other factor then that is harder to control is how do you interpret the data? But you measure the data and then you interpret the data so that you can predict a failure or degradation. And so there's really a number of approaches. One is, basically a statistical kind of approach where you've seen enough failures happen when certain things happen. And so it's a statistical thing that you can call that also empirical if you want. Then there is physical models where you basically run something like a digital twin where the failure is going to be related to some physical parameters that you can measure. And then basically now we're seeing AI coming in. AI is really still going to be based on some machine has to learn something, right? So you still need lots and lots of operating data, similar to statistical. But then you get this black box that can sign and kind of say, okay, a lot of things are going wrong and something's going to fail.
Yeah, and Klaus brought up the issue of sensors. I mean, you have to be aware that sensors are one of the major sources of machinery shutdown. Because again, as a component, they are prone to a statistical lifespan, and the more you have, the higher your likelihood is that something gives you erroneous signals. Just to give you an idea, on my car, the tire pressure measurement acts up, and the warning light comes up from time to time. Now, if I get out of the car and check my tire pressure, everything is okay. So the thing, the answer is not always, okay, put more sensors in. The answer is often also, and that's really where AI and the digital twin comes in, an advanced way of analyzing the inputs that you get from your sensors, the capability to identify faulty sensors from data of neighboring sensors and things like that.
Yeah, and we still have to kind of see how that plays out because you really don't know for another couple of years how AI is really going to improve condition-based maintenance because we just started with it and it takes a long time for seeing patterns of failures when you look at the compressors, gas turbines, because most of these machines don't fail very often. And so you really still need a lot of data. The one thing I did want to bring up, and Rainer mentioned it earlier for at least a minute, is that that you also do interventions for performance degradation, avoidance, or recovery of performance, right? I mean, you do water washes on a gas turbine compressor to recover performance. You do that also, obviously, to avoid in the long-term failure, but interventions are also scheduled to recover performance, power, and efficiency on a machine, and that's also important. So it's not just, okay, it's failure prevention, but it's also, hey, my machine is down 10% in power. I'd like to get a couple of those percents back. I know I can't do anything about the tip clearance opening, but I can do something about fouling on my compressor, and I can, clean my compressor and run it a little cleaner. So that's something to keep in mind. One last quick topic. Meantime between failure and equivalent operating hours. I know that they're two different things, but I wanted to bring those up real quick. Meantime between failures is for parts is often used for prediction of failures of turbo machinery. I don't think it's a very good measurement because turbo machines are very complex machines, and just multiplying all the probabilities that you get for meantime, it usually doesn't get you the right answer. But it still is something to look at, especially if you look at it from a parts to parts basis. And then finally, we mentioned earlier the scheduled intervals that manufacturers use for, running a gas turbine for 30,000 hours or 24,000 hours before you get to an overhaul. And then some manufacturers use a thing called equivalent operating hours. Rainer, since you're more familiar with gas turbines, can you talk about equivalent operating hours?
Yeah, there is the problem with a gas turbine is that you have two conceptual failure modes on the hot section. One is creep, the other one is thermal cycles. So if you run your engine all year long at full load at fairly constant operating conditions, thermal cycling is not one of your major problems. Creep is. Whereas if you have an engine that you start and stop 10 times a day, then other failure mechanisms become more the more life-limiting ones. So some manufacturers then said, okay, fine, we'll count every start as 100 operating hours, and then they came up with some number of equivalent operating hours. And again, if that's what the manufacturers have has experience with, that's certainly a proper way. There's a bit of an aberration that some manufacturers then say, okay, if I want to prove the operating experience of my engine, I use equivalent operating hours, which it's really not for. But again, the general concept of equivalent operating hours makes somewhat sense, but it really does not carry the fact that that the failure mode is very different from the damage that you get from a start versus the damage you get from full load operation.
And I have to, at least in my opinion, most of the time a combustor fails because of creep, not due to some mechanical fatigue. And so I think it's a little bit of a game there because equivalent operating hours kind of shorten the life of the machine. Sorry to say, give some manufacturers an additional earlier revenue stream rather than what corresponds to physics, which is creep. And creep is not driven by starts. Stop cycles at all, but it's really just driven by how long you're operating at a high temperature under stress conditions. We have to bring this to an end. We're running out of time here. This was an extremely interesting conversation, as usual. Rainer, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And I'm very much looking forward to the next one that we'll be doing for the Turbo Mistbuster podcast series. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was fun.
Thank you for joining us this episode, Klaus and Rainer. Also, a big thank you to our audience for tuning in. Don't forget to stay tuned for more TurboTime podcasts and the industry's biggest news. Also, please feel free to subscribe to our weekly newsletters and to receive our quarterly print magazines at www.turbomachinerymag.com. Once again, I am your host, James Cook, and we will see you next time.